Hi everyone, welcome to the India Independent Films Podcast, where we talk about films and with a little bit focus on film writing. I am Pankaj Sachdeva. I write on my blog Dichotomy of Irony and also contribute articles for the website. I'm with me Rahul Desai, creator for The Film Companion and writer for other publications. So I think we had a last conversation 3-4 weeks ago about the general films in 2000 up to 2000. So today we have some other topics we'll discuss, but before I go there, we'll talk a little bit about Oscars. But again, before I even go to the Oscars, Rahul, the standard question: how have you been and how are the last few weeks been?
Yeah, it's been an interesting few weeks. I've been fairly busy, traveled a bit. For some reason, in the last month alone, I've been to like 2 different college campuses for panels and all, which is good. I guess it's the time of the year where most of them have like culture and film festivals, so they invite people from the industry. And for some reason, I like going to these colleges and these universities because I don't know what it is. Maybe it reminds me of my own college days. And secondly, I just like the energy around. Like, and it's really nice to be talking on panels and getting a sense of where the teenagers or MBA aspirants or like engineers are headed today. So, and in general, I've never done like I've never had a hostel life myself. I was more of a day scholar here in Bombay. So yeah, just to stay on these campuses for like a couple of days gives me like a very new perspective on how life might have been had I been one of them also, because most of them are doing professional courses, 4 or 5 years, law and MBA and whatnot. So it's for me a very small taste of what that life used to be like. So I've been doing that on the personal front, and otherwise in terms of films, it's been your usual crowded sort of gateway into summer. I feel like apart from the Oscars in the Indian and Hindi space, it's not been that interesting, apart from I think Kiran Rao's Lapata Ladies, which was really nice to watch. And it was one of those films that reminded you of 12th Fail last year. It really picked up with word of mouth and reviews over the 2 weeks it was in theaters. I think it still is. And a lot of people started watching it because, you know, nobody had a bad thing to say about it. Very sweet film, very well done film. It was good to see her back after Dhobi Ghat, which has been a while. And apart from that, there was an indie film called Fairy Folk, which was by Karan Gore, who had directed Shay a decade ago, indie film. This is also entirely indie. It stars real-life married couple Rasika Dugal and Mukul Chadda. I think a couple of reviews about that film, and I think whoever I spoke to enjoyed that film also. It's like half sci-fi, half fable, but very strong commentary on marriage and Indian relationships. Very well-acted. Mukul Chadda is great. So those were the two films, and oddly enough, they came in the same week. I think I spoke about Poacher last time, I'm not sure, but that was my favorite series so far of this year. Nimisha Sajayan delivered a terrific performance. It's Richie Mehta's new show, and that is on Amazon Prime. So yeah, apart from these three titles, which I gave very positive reviews, there wasn't much else to write home about, really.
You know, what's the typical question you get from these students? Is it how to become a film critic?
It depends on the purpose of their panels. Like, I went to a law college like last week, and the purpose was to speak with other experts on the panel about like pan-India cinema, because they wanted a more holistic picture about how, say, a film critic, there was a filmmaker with me, there was a professor with me. So all three of us sort of approach the topic or how we've dealt with it in our own professions over the last decade. Because pan-Indian cinema, as we know, is like it's a fascinating term because it can mean so many things. So that was an interesting panel. That was a very specific thing the law students wanted us to talk about. So that was a little more academic, but I was at an MBA college some weeks ago, and it was more, even though I was like slotted to do a workshop, it was just a conversation with one of the students, and there was a Q&A session, and I really enjoyed doing that because I could speak about not only my own career, but what film criticism is today in India. And a lot of the questions from the students are actually surprisingly good because they're not from the line. And there's always a joke that, you know, if you want to get into the film line, do an MBA or become an engineer, because most people get disillusioned by that. I think, yeah, most of the questions revolve around like what people would like to know about how sort of film critics first of all earn a living. Secondly, what their relationship is with the film industry. Do they hobnob with people? And how do they manage to remain like quote unquote unbiased when they have to review stuff? And and of course, there's so much to talk about in terms of controversy, in terms of how you're dealing with the political landscape today, or the toxic masculinity thing that we've been talking about for years now in Hindi cinema. So yeah, I love the curiosity of the students, because they come really, I mean, they really listen to you, which is different from like doing the Young Critics Lab, because there you already assume that they know a certain, they know enough about like the craft that they want to get into, and there you're trying to give them an idea of the life they're choosing or they want to lead. And so it's like a weekly rundown of what a film critic does every week. But with a lot of these professional courses and all, you tend to speak in general, a more like broader picture of what you do. I don't think I've ever been, like in the last two times I've gone in the last month, I don't think I've ever been asked a basic question, even though one of them very sheepishly asked what my favorite film is. And but she also then said that I know it's the worst question to ask a film critic because it changes every few weeks. But yeah, it's I like talking about, you know, what we do, as you may have guessed.
Right. I did see a reel where I think it was Kala Ghoda. Did you visit there as well? I think, I don't know if the same one, but there also there was a panel of film critics.
And yeah, that was a tragedy also, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, so that reels are available on the Film Critics Guild page. So yeah, and I think the video is also there. Okay, now coming to the Oscars, did you watch, and any surprises?
I mean, this is probably the first time in many years I could not wake up for it, because it was 1 hour early, as you may have guessed. It was usually 5 a.m. in India. It starts this time 4 a.m. And I had a very long night before that. So I watched like it afterwards, after knowing the winners, when I, on Monday itself, because it's now streaming on Hotstar and all, you can watch the whole thing as if it were live. You don't have to wait for the telecast to come again in the night like we used to do on Star Plus back in the day. I no surprises in terms of the awards itself. I think everyone pretty much predicted all the big awards very rightly, because it was that kind of year, you know. It was the awards, the whole bunch of ceremonies leading up to the Oscars, you get a sense of who the favorites are and who's going to win. And normally, I think last few years, the Oscars haven't been really about upsets so much. It's really been about the telecast. It's been about the performances. It's been about maybe a couple of good, nice moments during the ceremony. But yeah, and the speeches, of course. Some of the speeches were really nice this year also. But I don't think in terms of like surprises, there were many. I think everyone I expected won, and my own choices were very different. Most of them weren't nominated also. So it was a little strange. But then I think the Oscars managed to do that every year.
Not even Lily Gladstone? Were you hoping?
I was hoping for Lily Gladstone to win amongst the actresses. Either her or Sandra Huller. But I knew they would not. Like even though she won the Acting Guild Award before the Oscars, which is supposed to be a precursor, I was fairly sure they would go for Emma Stone, because it's that kind of film director performance that is so obviously out there that I think the Academy has certain, like, I mean, I don't know, they go for a certain aesthetic in terms of, and of course we know, like, you know, Yorgos Lanthimos is manages to get his actresses some very meaty performances. So, I mean, I haven't really seen Poor Things, but because it did not release in India and it's playing on Hotstar, but I'm guessing it's a very censored version. So we'll have to find other ways to see it. But I really love Lily Gladstone, and as well as Sandra Huller in Anatomy of a Fall. I was really hoping one of them would, but I mean, I was fairly realistic about like the main awards. I knew Oppenheimer, I knew Killers of the Flower Moon really wouldn't win anything. It's not surprising. Scorsese comes year after year. If it was some Bollywood award function, there was no way a legend like Scorsese would be attending every year knowing that he's not going to win anything. He's just going to get nominated. His presence is going to be appreciated. And that's it. Like, it's quite a miracle that a film like Killers of the Flower Moon went home without any award, just like Irishman.
Why is that? Like, why don't they give to Scorsese? Is it because he's already won? Or is he like...
I don't know. Done? I think it's like they take it for granted that if he makes a film, of course it's going to be nominated. It's almost like a lifetime achievement sort of thing. It's like Meryl Streep. If she does a performance in a year, whether it's good, bad, middling, or whether the film is good or bad, she's always going to get nominated. Like, one slot is always there for her. It's like the greatness is already at a level where I feel like they are anyways going to be nominated. So I don't think they have the guts to not nominate Scorsese. If they really weren't ever going to give an award to or vote for like any Scorsese film winning, then they may as well give like chances to newer films. Like, I would have loved to see like Past Lives and all get directed in the same categories rather than just Best Picture or Screenplay or whatever. So, I don't know. Maybe it's because of his career, because of how long he's been around. I think the same thing happens with Spielberg or all the veterans in their 70s and 80s who've been around for a long time. It's, they get nominated and that's about it. Like, that's the celebration of their career mostly. And unless it's a really outstanding sort of film which made waves or something, which I don't think happens a lot at their age. It's most of the films are like... very, very solid, and they always critically acclaimed and talked about, but I don't think it really acquires that Oscar buzz. Even with Fablemans, I pretty much expected Spielberg wouldn't really win anything, and it's always like that. I feel like with the older directors, it's always going to work out like that, and they add so much bluster, and they add so much quality to a category they are getting nominated in also. So I feel like there's a bit of, in terms of image, it helps the Oscars a lot. It would not do them any favors if, say, a Scorsese film like this, a 3.5-hour film comes out and they don't read and they ignore it. So I think this is the best they can do.
Yeah, one of the articles I was reading, they said that, you know, Lily Gladstone was almost not there in the third part of the film. So, and some award nominations have actually given her a supporting actress. And maybe that was the reason, you know, like she's not there enough. But again, I don't know that's the true reason, because the length of the part is never really how Oscar they decided.
Yeah, it's just about the significance of the part or the character they played. I don't think the screen time should matter.
Yeah, yeah. And again, surprisingly, Nolan won finally. His first one.
I don't think he's
won before. Would you give it to Oppenheimer, or are there any favorite Nolan films that you would have loved to see that winning?
Honestly, like I even when I was writing about the Oscars for a bit, I treated this, I mean, it was fairly obvious he would win, and you treat this win as more of a lifetime achievement award for all the better films he's directed before this. Like, a lot of his films I grew up on, they were all my favorites: Inception, Interstellar, Prestige, Dark Knight, a bunch of them, Memento. So I think, like, even though he's been nominated maybe once or twice before, I don't think he was ever the favorite to win. And Oppenheimer came in a year which was very different. It came along with Barbie. I think that helped it a lot also in terms of critical image. And I like the film, but I'm not going to say it's his best film. I think far from. I think he should have won for Dunkirk if they were going to give a best director for anything. And it's the same reason Scorsese won for Departed. It was a reward for all the work he's done over the years, and he's been consistently good at it. And I think it's an irony that Nolan wins for a biopic because it's the most reviled genre. And to his credit, he tried to maybe reinvent it a little, or like juggle it around a little with his usual timeline stuff. But I don't think it's his most memorable film. I don't know what to really make of it in terms of legacy. It's too early, but I would definitely give it for some of his previous films.
And again, surprisingly, Wes Anderson also won his first But in a different category, I think, not necessarily a film, but a short film or something like that, live animation.
Yeah, he won for the short film, and it's ironically, even a feature released in the same year, Asteroid City, which had fairly
nominated.
Mixed history. Yeah, which wasn't even nominated, totally ignored. I didn't like that film either, but I thought it would, like, Wes Anderson also one of the directors you just expect nominations from. So I think this was the Academy's way of atoning for that, saying that, okay, you know, we didn't like your feature so much, but you made a short film, and I think it's time you get that Oscar sort of thing. So yeah, I wasn't surprised that won it. I watched it also. I think it's streaming on Netflix. It's very Wes Anderson-ish, and surprisingly, it's better than a lot of his last two or three features also. So I enjoyed it.
Yes. How is Zone of Interest? I recently
wrote about it. I didn't get to write about as many Oscar films as I would have liked because the workload is just too much. But I enjoyed writing about Zone of Interest. I was very happy to watch the film. I think it's one of the best examples of how a soundscape can be used. Very happy. I think the only surprise was Zone of Interest, and it was a good surprise, winning for sound over Oppenheimer, because everyone expected Oppenheimer to win. But Zone of Interest soundscape is one of the most inventive and evocative sort of ways of using sound in a film. I thought it was a fantastic film, very chilling to watch. And the sound made all the difference, because it's about a Nazi family that lives in the, like, just beyond the walls of the Auschwitz concentration camp. And they lead a very normal life, like a regular German family life. And whatever terror that's happening in the camp, we only hear it on screen. We never see it. And yeah, the sound design is excellent because of that, because it constantly challenges us to look at the family a different way. They are not a regular dysfunctional family. There's so much happening. And it's that entire, you know, art-artist debate, the argument and all, it speaks to the modern times we live in. I thought that was a very Jonathan Glazer managed to address what is happening in the world right now, whether it be India, Palestine, you know, anywhere, North Korea, anywhere that fascism is basically sort of spreading. I think the film is very contemporary, even though it used the Holocaust and Nazi symbologies. I think it spoke to a more current time and our complicity in it, because the entire point of the film, of the soundscape, was that, you know, you go about it like nothing is happening. And I think that's the story of what is happening right now.
Right. How was Holdovers? The Holdovers.
Yeah, that's another film I just managed to write about. Lovely film, like very warm and feel good film in a way. It's not like the most original in terms of the premise is. It's a very Alexander Payne film in that sense. But the thing about his films is he manages to edge out his characters in very different ways and speak to us in use very popular tropes and turn them on their head in terms of the emotional quotient and intelligence. And I think it was a very warm film. I think most of us watched it in December during Christmas when we are looking for Christmas films before it released in India. And I really liked it then. And I don't need to watch it again to remember it. Like, I wrote about it 2 months after it released, but I didn't need to revisit it. And it's that kind of, like, you remember the scenes, you remember the characters. I really like Paul Giamatti in it. I was actually hoping he would win Best Actor. I knew that Cillian Murphy would win for Oppenheimer. And we all know that dramatic films are favored over, say, romantic comedies or, like, light coming of age dramas like Holdovers. But yeah, I was really hoping Paul Giamatti would, because it was a very funny and poignant performance as a professor in that film. So yeah, definitely one of my more memorable films from last year. Plus, I wrote a piece about it. It reminded me of many other things. And it's always nice when a film can speak to you on a personal level.
Right. And then Anatomy of a Fall. One thing I just remembered, like, you know, last year, was there a donkey in Banshees of Inisherin or a yak? I don't remember.
It was a pony. Yeah, yeah.
And this year is a dog, you know, in that Anatomy of a Fall. So how was that film? And any thoughts on
that? Yeah, I mean, it's quite a moment for animals in these Oscar-nominated films. You're right about Banshees. but I don't think they transported the animal to the Oscars. It's very nice to see Messi on the award circuit, the dog's name, and it was good to see him in the Oscars. Anatomy itself, very powerful film, I thought. Again, you know, like a fairly basic template in terms of how it uses a whodunit sort of trope template to shed light on, say, marital dynamics and you know, power equations within a marriage, within a troubled marriage. It's a very well acted, very well written film. I remember watching it at Mami a couple of months ago in October, November. And it was definitely worth watching on the big screen. And it's the kind of film that also makes you nervous to write about it because there's so much happening in it. The dog was used wonderfully in the film as well. It wasn't just a regular animal performance, as say. It won the Palme d'Or also, I think, at Cannes for it. And I was expecting it to win more than just Best Original Screenplay at the Oscars, honestly. I thought there would be an upset or two in store, maybe because Justin Triet was the only female director nominated this time, even though there was Barbie and Past Lives, which were as good for me. But I'm glad it was the foreign language film that took all the headlines along with Zone of Interest, because those were the two best of last year in terms of international films.
Right. I was just thinking about Past Lives, you know. It didn't win, unfortunately, anything. But disappointing. That was like, because it's a great film. We've spoken about it.
It's a great film, yeah. And it's so easy. It's deceptively profound, so it's so easy to ignore it, you know, as an awards contender. Like, you're supposed to feel happy that it was at least nominated. It's that kind of film. You know, when the smaller films don't stand the chance in a blockbuster adult year, like Barbie and all the big films that came out last year. I was hoping it would win, like, writing at least. It was sad to see acting nominations and, you know, nothing better, nothing more than Best Picture. And since Best Picture has become 10 nominations and all, you know that they're always going to be films like this as more of a consolation prize, really. So, but, you know, you don't need Oscar glory to, you know, to remind yourself of how great a film that is.
Yeah, absolutely. And how was Bradley Cooper in Maestro? Was that performance?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
He was, I mean, I liked it. I actually, my favorite part of the film was Carey Mulligan as the wife in that film. I thought she delivered a wonderfully nuanced and very quiet performance in terms of like a wife who resents, you know, the greatness of her husband. And I thought Bradley Cooper, the issue with, like, he's really a one-man army. Like, you can sense his passion for filmmaking. And he did every, like, he's the director and the lead actor of this film. Very difficult to make. And very ambitious film. I quite liked it. Bradley Cooper is the kind of actor whose performance really shows on screen. Like, you can see the effort. You can see how much he's acting on screen, the magnitude of it. And I think that doesn't sit well with a lot of Academy members who vote for it. Like, when you can see how hard the actor is acting, I don't think it always works. And I think it's a polar opposite of someone like Paul Giamatti in Holdovers, who is very seamless in his acting. Or even Cillian Murphy to an extent in Oppenheimer, apart from his facial expressions and the internal turmoil that the protagonist is going through, I don't think his acting shows as much. Like, he lives the character, sure, but Bradley Cooper really goes all out. And the thing is, because he's primarily an actor, it also shows in his direction. Like, he's trying to impress the viewer with the camera, with the one take, long take shots, with the black and white, with the kind of camera work and editing that he uses in the film. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I really like the film, but I thought it was very in your face how good the film was or how good the acting was. So I think I didn't expect him to really win anything for it.
And, you know, that guy who made American Fiction, he made a very interesting speech, like, you know, make 21 million films. How was that film? Because I had not heard about that film at all. Rest, I was, you know, aware of it. Okay, what is this? What is that? Have you seen American Fiction?
It's streaming here. And, like, I wanted to watch it before the Oscars because I knew it was favorite to win writing and adapted scenes. And I was very curious because the premise read, like, really smart and it spoke to like the times we live in also, like the way we tend to weaponize certain things, like black storytelling or like any woke storytelling or queer storytelling. Lot of filmmakers tend to be dishonest about them and use them as a gimmick. So I thought like American Fiction, at least from the two-line premise I read, spoke to those times. And it would have been very interesting to see, because I'm partial towards the films that win the screenplay awards, whether adapted or original. And I always look at them as the more inventive films that in an ideal world would win Best Picture also. So, I'm yet to watch it. I'm very curious to see it. Hopefully, I'll see it soon. The problem is once the Oscars get over and all, even your excitement for all these films gets over and you never get around to watching them because there's so much work on the side. But I hope to do that. Another upset for me, like for me personally, was like Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse not winning like Best Animated Picture. And I know like Boy and the Heron, directed by like the master of animation himself. I think that winning was fairly predicted and it was expected. But one of my favorite films of last year was the animated Spider-Man. And it's the most inventive, dazzling use of, hybrid mediums I've seen in my life. And it had a great story to tell also. I was fairly disappointed that didn't win though.
Yeah. And my last question on Oscars, have you seen Godzilla Minus One?
Oh, no, it didn't release in India. And I think a lot of us cinephiles have been up in arms about it, because for me personally, I love watching creature films and I've been a Godzilla watcher for the longest time. And I've not watched a lot of the Japanese classics, but I hear that this one is right up there in terms of melding like both eras of filmmaking. And I really want to watch it. Like, I don't want to watch it on my TV or laptop. And I know you can, but I'd like to watch it on the big screen. That's one of the tragedies about like Indian Oscar season. A lot of the films that you really want to watch and the ones that are technically competent, this one, Best VFX also. And I love King Kong and Godzilla films. So I'm just very sad that I won't get to watch it here anytime soon.
Yeah. Before I come to our next topic, which is we'll talk about Aishwarya Rai. Are you helping on Film Critics Awards this time?
Yeah. So Film Critics Guild Awards just happened on Tuesday night, actually. And
The awards are also done. I thought only the nominations are out.
No. So the awards happened. It's if you like go on the Instagram page, all the winners have been announced. Also, I think. And I think it will stream on Hotstar at some point, the entire awards section. This time it was, for me, it was my favorite sort of edition, because I think they got like, it was a 3-hour sort of ceremony. I think it went off pretty well. It was focused mainly on the awards and there were a lot of awards to give away because there's short films, web shows and features, three different mediums and categories. So they had to be the main awards and everything. I was involved in the curation for the web shows, for the long form storytelling. So all the nominations, and we had a bunch of debates about the nominations and all. And I didn't know the winners till they were announced myself. So I was fairly very excited to attend the awards myself and see who won. I'm glad that, I think a bunch of my favorites, sort of personal favorites, also won most of the awards. For those who are curious, I think you can go on the Instagram handle and see who won. I think it was a step forward for the guild in terms of managing the awards and in terms of getting really good attendance. I think a lot of the people who came to accept and nominees who came to accept the awards when they won gave some really nice speeches, and you could tell that these awards sort of meant a lot to them, as opposed to, you know, your more mainstream Z and Filmfare awards and whatnot. So, it was a nice night, basically.
Yeah, because, you know, I know I'm a little biased, but Critics Awards have their own thing. There's lack of, I mean, everybody's biased, like, how they vote. But, you know, it's not, there's no commercial aspect to it, least I hope so. I'm sure there isn't in these awards. And it's a nice initiative, which I think is also, you know, like, nobody asked for it. But, you know, as responsible film critics, the initiative was taken. So I admire that, you know, effort, because at the end of the day, a thankless thing, you know, there is money involved, like all those sort of things. So it's a lot of work, I can foresee.
that people have to put in.
And you know, like, I mean, if Anupama Chopra again hadn't started this, then nobody would have really taken the initiative. So it's really nice that she uses her privilege in different ways. Like, starting Film Companion was one thing, starting the Guild Awards, and you can tell it takes a big toll on a lot of the senior critics who are at the forefront of it, and especially her and all. We are just involved in curation and the awards, and you know, maybe a couple of panels in the year, like you were talking about the Kalagoda panel, that was also a film critics panel. So, I mean, we can help in whatever ways, but in the end, we are all very preoccupied with our own careers and trying to earn a living, right? Like the younger critics. So I think the older ones have a lot of responsibility in terms of arranging these things. And yeah, you're right about being no commercial aspect. And secondly, Karan Johar was invited to give the keynote speech. It was a very nice speech, actually. And it was surprising to see, like, titan of the industry sort of attend the give a keynote speech, put so much effort into writing it when he knows he's not been nominated for even one category, despite it being his most critically acclaimed film from last year, Rocky or Rani. But because this is a Pan-India Award thing and the films from all languages are nominated, it's really hard for the mainstream films to get noticed or be nominated in any of the categories. And it shows. If you go through the nominations, it shows. You see Hindi films, 7 different languages in the best film category in the 10 films. So yeah, it's a very arduous process of curation, I think 3 or 4 months. But I think it's worth it because we get to watch all the films also. Like the Hindi film critics who are involved in the curation of best films get to see Malayalam and Tamil and Bengali and all the films, and ditto for the other languages as well.
Yeah, I mean, I also remember Anupama Chopra was the one who saved Mami. Like she got it together with Gio and Kiran Rao and all, they came together. I still remember that when they were going to shut it down. These awards. And, you know, Karan Johar, for, I don't know how he is a person, but at least he's one director who always reads what other critics tried. I also remember there was this Coffee with Karan episode where this is very long ago, I think they called a critics episode, Rashid Rani had all this come, and I think they asked all these directors, whom do you prefer, critical acclaim or box office hit? I think all of them said box office, but again, Rajkumar Hirani said, I would prefer critical acclaim, which was a bit surprising for me even like so long ago, and because he has that commercial thing. Of course, this is like 2007-8. But yeah, there's some directors who actually read, and I remember Shah Rukh's speech as well in one of these editor guilds. Yeah. I think the first one, Shah Rukh was invited. He gave a very beautiful thing on film criticism. So that shows, you know, like, people read, like, you know, at the end of the day, it matters to somebody who's made that film.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. All right, let's move to another topic. Let's talk about Aishwarya Rai, you know, another superstar and very interesting actor. I think one of my personal favorites. How do you see Aishwarya as an actor? Is she a director's actor, or is she, like, you know, mixed? How do you see her as a performer?
I mean, I for me, like, obviously growing up, she was first known as a beauty queen, obviously, because Miss World was such a big deal in the 90s. And the thing is, as Indians, you're conditioned to basically immediately, like, assume that, of course, they're not going to be good actors. They look great, and she's probably the most beautiful actor or actress we've had in, like, the last 3 decades. And it's really hard to look past how perfect she is in terms of, like, that beauty. And that works against a lot of these very good-looking actors and actresses. And it's a challenge that not many people talk about, actually. And I think Aishwarya Rai is a great example of how she managed to transcend all those very Indian parameters of, you know, like, physical appreciation and her face, which is, you know, like, which has been talked about for so long, for so many years. And I think she's a great example of how she improved as a performer after challenging yourself by working with, like, directors like Bhansali. And she worked with all the big directors in that decade between 98 and 2008 or 10. And I think that reeks of ambition, and to be more than what you look like and to challenge all those conventional norms of Bollywood saying that, you know, you'll remain a heroine and like just be happy that you're, I mean, that you know, you can work in films. You can because of your looks, but I think she's always been a very ambitious actress, at least back when she was very prolific and acting in different kinds of films. I think she reminds me of how much Deepika improved later, because even Deepika, when she entered the scene, she was not a most natural actress, and she took at least 4 or 5 years before Cocktail released and before she started actually improving like by leaps and bounds in every film. And she is one of the better actresses we have today. And I think Aishwarya was a example of how Deepika improved like long time back, and I think she showed that it was possible. I think she was a director's actress because of the director she worked with, because I think Hum Dil De Chuke Sanam was fairly early in her career. Till then, she was again only revered as a beauty queen turned actress, and she did a couple of other language films. It was mostly scale, and I don't think people took her seriously till she did Hum Dil De Chuke Sanam, and till they realized that she can weaponize that beauty in different ways and with the kind of character she plays. Personally, you know, I've not been the greatest fan of her in terms of her acting talent, but I really admire the career that she led, and she even cut across borders and went international with a couple of performances in the West also. And you know, I've never fan of that accent that she accumulated over time. But yeah, I think that decade in which she had become, I think, one of the biggest stars in the country, acting stars in the country, laid the foundation for a lot of, you know, the Priyankas and the Deepikas and the Alias that followed. And I think, yeah, over time, I don't see myself rewatching a lot of her films, but I remember they'll be a very important part of like Hindi film history.
Have you seen last year's Ponniyin Selvan by any chance?
I managed to watch the first part at least, and like, you know, it's I'm quite amazed that first of all, a film like that was made, and secondly, only Mani Ratnam could. You know, like, again, it's very difficult to divorce Aishwarya Rai from the legacy she represents, you know, from the way she looks, how ethereal she is even now. And I think a lot of directors are realizing that they can use that to their advantage, especially in the way they cast them and the characters they tend to play. And I think that was a good example again of how Mani Ratnam saw that in her. And it is one of those things where you call Aishwarya Rai ageless, and you call her like she has that natural relationship with the camera and with the screen, with the big screen. And I think she is a big screen actress in every sense possible. And that's why I don't think she ever... I don't remember ever doing smaller films per se, because I feel like I don't think like her presence could be really construed on a smaller screen. And I think she's chosen her roles very well, even at the advanced stage of her career now. Even though she hasn't been acting a lot lately, I think the few directors that she's chosen to work with, like Mani Ratnam, for example, I think it's a very smart choice.
Mm. You know, what surprised me was like last year, she was one of the best performances in a film or even like a Hindi film, Ponniyin Selvan 2, but she was nowhere any nomination. And like the female category was largely open, but I was just surprised that nobody considered Aishwarya, but it was one of her finest performances, at least for me. She was very good in Ponniyin Selvan 2. But as it happens, like, you know, it's different for different cases.
No, I agree. Like, you're right about the fact. But I think, like, it's, again, you know, it's our preconceived notions and our conditioning. First of all, a film of that scale and that, like, magnitude, you automatically tend to look beyond critical acclaim or how, like, powerful the performance is. And you're right about the fact that probably one of the more memorable performances of last year, and especially her role. And again, I come back to that point where I feel like a lot of her legacy works against her in these cases. Like we are sort of trained to look at her in a certain way and maybe not take her as seriously as an actress, as a mainstream actress, as she should be. And you know, I think this film again was another example of that, because the scale was so massive that and she has done films like this early on as well, and I think it's really hard to to take into context and to look at a particular perspective of how we judge acting performances. And yeah, it was definitely, I agree with you about the fact that it is probably one of her career best performances.
Tell me about your memories of Josh.
Yeah, I was going to come to that actually, because it immediately flashed in my mind when I was talking about early career performances. And it was such a, it was also like quite unheard of back then, like two superstars playing brother and sister in a film. And this two after, I think, just before Devdas or after Devdas, I'm not sure exactly. I think before Devdas. And it's hard to do that, right? Like, you normally play best friends, like, say, Kuch Kuch Hota, and then turn into lovers and all. And I always liked, it was, I think, in the same year or as Mohabbatein, or maybe around the same time. And it was very difficult for, like, kids like me to understand that they were lovers in one film, just dead in one film, and they are brothers and sister. They have the sibling chemistry in one film. And you're not used to seeing such good-looking actors playing brother and sister. So for me, that was the first barrier to get through while I was watching that film. But I actually enjoyed that film. I remember I was still in Ahmedabad then. I watched it with my dad again, like I usually used to watch all the films with. And I was very excited about it, first of all, because Mansoor Khan also, after a long time, he was making a film. I was very curious about this very pulpy Goa film, Goa gangster film. And I, of course, big Shah Rukh Khan fan, so I was hoping that he'd get it right after he got it wrong with Ram Jaane, you know, these like slightly tapuri characters that he tends to like overdo. I haven't watched Josh for a long time, but I remember that film so much, the music so much. I remember liking it very much when I watched it, but I also realized that people around me weren't like a big fan of the film. I think, you know, like all the actors like Chandratur, Sharad Kapoor, you know, you remember all of that, even Sushant Singh for that matter, very key role in that film. I will never forget the backstory of that film where the siblings discover that they are actually children of a Portuguese sort of ruler who had come with, and so that's how their mother basically died in heartbreak. And those are the one of those flashbacks that become core memories in your head when you watch a film as a particular kid and they stick with you. That's how I always used to look at Goa for the longest time till I started visiting more often. So yeah, I was deeply impressionable and it had an impact on my mind. Like I don't know how I would react to it today if I watched it, but I enjoyed that film very much back then.
Was it the same thing with Mohabbatein?
Mohabbatein is one of my, like, I'm still going to own it as one of my favorites. Like, I remember watching it, like, counting the number of times I watched it in the first 2 or 3 years, and I counted to 25 or 26. And this was a more than 3 hour long film, and I was obsessed with Raj Aryan, I was obsessed with Narayan Shankar. That film, I think I may have mentioned earlier in one of the podcasts, it taught me, like, Hindi on a better, because I never spoke a lot of Hindi in Ahmedabad also, because I was in an English speaking household and a lot of friends I had spoke like different languages. So it really taught me like how to, like, first of all, I was giving my board exams around the same time. So I remember learning a lot of Hindi dialogue from the film, Aditya Chopra's dialogue, and using a lot of that dialogue in the essays I wrote for my exams in 10th standard. Like there was a autobiography of a cow or autobiography of a camel or something like that, when in 10th standard in the pre-boards we used to like give our papers, and I used to use a lot of Mohabbatein dialogues, funnily enough, in those essays and autobiographies, which I found really amusing, because I used to read it out to my dad and mom later, and they were like, how did you learn these words and where did you get these words from? And they didn't know it was from Mohabbatein. A lot of the monologues that Raj Aryan tells Narayan Shankar towards the end in that climactic scene in the fireplace, I think I stole a lot of those lines and used it in my essays.
God. Okay. What are, like, does she have the best chemistry with Hrithik?
Aishwarya Rai? I'd say, I don't know about Shah Rukh. It's hard, right? In Mohabbatein, though, she was, I really liked the fact in Mohabbatein that she was dead throughout and he saw a ghost, and it was a really nice, like, platonic, that's how as children, when you grow up, if you see someone who's grieving on screen, or it was for me always like that, the fact that she played a ghost in that film was always, it was imprinted into my memory because it really worked for me. Like, it really helped that she first of all looked the way she did, and secondly that it really sold the fact that a character like Raj Aryan was in love with. I really loved their chemistry in that film, even though they didn't have too many scenes together. Hrithik and Aishwarya, I'd say they had the advantage of, first of all, making the most picture-perfect pair possible. I wasn't a big fan of Dhoom 2, but I did like them in Jodha Akbar quite a lot. And like, I liked the chemistry at least quite a lot. I grew up also, like, my father was never a big fan of Aishwarya Rai. She always thought she was a little too plastic on screen. But I spent a lot of the later years trying to convince him that she's improved, and she's... I showed Jodha Akbar as an example also to him, saying that, you know, she's really evolved as an actress, and she could have just sat back on her laurels and been like, you know, I've cut across internationally and act a certain way. But I always thought she was more than an average actress. Like, I always thought she was a good balance of mainstream and ability per se. And I thought her chemistry with Hrithik was a good example of how she had sort of evolved from the conventional heroine template.
Right. I think she was amazing in Jodha Akbar. I think I like her even in Dhoom 2 with Hrithik. I mean, they look, and again, it's more, you know, physical. They're such a good looking couple. They look very good together.
With Shah Rukh, it was a lot of it was platonic and asexual chemistry. With Hrithik, it was more sexual. Like Shah Rukh, it was never sexual with any actress. And that was, I think, the beauty of Shah Rukh, because he spoke to a very specific kind of Indian, like, aspirational love. Where you don't, like, sexual is considered quote-unquote dirty in the culture in 90s, 2000s at least. So Shah Rukh represented that kind of romance, like, where you could desire someone so conventionally without, like, looking at their body or their, you know, physical attraction. And I think Hrithik got in that sexual aspect. And I think Hrithik and Aishwarya, you're right about the fact that in Dhoom 2, it was like, that's what they capitalized on.
Yeah, I think in Fighter, they tried to do that with Hrithik and Deepika. I think they were trying to do the same thing, but they've never worked together, but I don't think it worked. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it didn't work.
Okay, and what are your favorite Aishwarya performances that come to mind?
I think... which is the Bengali film she did?
Chokarbali.
Chokarbali was, and definitely...
Raincoat.
Yeah, and Raincoat. So both of those films were definitely probably in my top three Aishwarya performances. Because again, you know, as I said, those were the films that defied her sense of scale. And I think she really... That was the time she really wanted to prove herself as an actress by working with, like, not only other language directors, but very critically acclaimed directors. Mani Ratnam wasn't the only one. She worked with, you know, Ritu Parno. And it was just very nice to see someone like her challenge herself like that. And I think it was very successful performances also. I think she was used very well in those films. I think those two were some of my favorite Aishwarya performances. And I think maybe in terms of Hindi... I think like the Bhansali films, like I think she was very, she was perfect for her role in Devdas, and as well as Hum Did Te Chuke Sanam, and as you mentioned, Jodha Akbar as well. But I think Devdas I have a soft spot for in terms of like Aishwarya and what she represented and, you know, the kind of performance she delivered. Otherwise, it was, you know, I wasn't a big fan of her in Ae Dil Hai Mushkil. I think she overdid the whole Urdu lyricism, Pakistan poet thing. But it was hard to look past the fact that Ranbir and her had some solid chemistry.
Yeah, that was sort of my next question, you know, how Ae Dil Hai Mushkil, so you covered it. But, you know, I just remembered in your review of Rocky and Rani, you had mentioned Mohabbatein, that how that whole aspect of Rani and Jaya Bachchan's character was very much like, you know, Narayan Shankar's Parampara, Pratishtha, Anushasan. Somehow it didn't click to me when I was watching it. I was thinking more in terms of Kabhi Khushi Kabhi Gham. But you'd like to just, do you remember that thing?
Yeah, I do. Because, you know, there were a bunch of scenes where they were almost in a duel with each other, where especially the laddu making scene in Rocky.
Yeah.
where and you could tell that these are very written monologues, dialogues, and for some reason it just reminded me, it took me back to that exact moment I was watching Raj Aryan like challenge Narayan Shankar and trying to change his impression towards him, like trying to basically win him over with love and not like hatred or hostility. And I think that was the key essence of Mohabbatein, because I think it wasn't so much a rivalry as it was like coming back to win someone over. And I think the same thing was happening in Rocky Aur Rani. I like the fact that they adapted it to a more modern context and then never really redeemed the Jaya Bachchan character. I think that's how it should be.
Anything on Taal as a film?
Oh, yes. I'm glad you mentioned Taal. That was definitely my favorite, one of my favorite Aishwarya Hindi performances. I'd say more than the Bhansali movies also. Because Taal for me was, first of all, one of my favorite films of the year, 99, I think. It was the biggest year for Hindi film actors in the longest time, because Hum Dil De Chuke and Taal came around the same time. And great music, obviously, most haunting soundtrack. And I really liked that film. And I think she was fantastic in it. I think Anil Kapoor delivered one of my favorite supporting performances in the longest time. I went to watch it like twice or thrice in 1 week. Because on the big screen, it just played differently. And it was the first year of multiplexes in India, in Ahmedabad. Taal was one of my first films I watched in a multiplex. And as I can never forget, you know, how sort of Subhash Gai sort of, you know, used that entire Aishwarya Rai aesthetic with the A.R. Rahman soundtrack to such a phenomenal effect. Like, it really worked wonders. And I haven't seen it in the longest time, but I would only want to watch it on the big screen.
Yeah, somehow, you know, when I see people hate Taal a lot, I mean, I've read reviews, like, they call it a stupid film, but I thought it was very beautifully done. Yes, there is that commercial aspect, which seems a little weird now, that whole Coca-Cola, I was reading it, that he, you know, bid to the highest bidder, whether he reached out to Pepsi, or Coca-Cola, whosoever will pay, they will do that. But as a story, I think the film was very beautifully done. Akshay Khanna was also great. Okay, Guru or Ravan?
I think Guru. I think Guru. Even though, I mean, technically, like, wasn't as much an Aishwarya Rai film as you'd guess, but yeah, in general, like, I feel like it was around the phase where I feel like Mani Ratnam was single-handedly resuscitating Abhishek Bachchan's career. And I think I still prefer Guru to Ravan.
And have you seen Jeans by any chance?
Yeah, that was probably the first Aishwarya Rai film. And it was such a big deal because most expensive Indian film ever made. And you know, all that hype that used to be there in the 90s, because, you know, it was one of those breakout pan-Indian films, so to say. And I watched Jeans and I was not impressed at all. And I was like, if she's going to be this actress. And it was very much Aishwarya Rai and Miss World mode and whatnot. And I think it was a bit of a misfire even then as a kid. But we all watched it and we all were hyping it up like how, because, you know, it used to be a big deal to see the budget of a film and to see the scale of a film. But it wasn't until a few years later till you realize that one of my other favorite Aishwarya Rai performances was Aab Laut Chale. I don't think it's spoken about enough. It's one of my favorite guilty pleasures also. I know it's directed by Rishi Kapoor and I keep watching it from now, like every now and then. I love the way, like, I don't think New York or Manhattan has been represented better in a film, and I'm counting Kalo now in this. And I think very aspiration, sort of underdog, son of the soil film, goes to America, captured that entire post-liberalization zeitgeist that India was going through. Rajesh Khanna, in one of his, you know, later career roles, even though he was hamming it up, I think everything worked for me in that film. I was a big fan of that film.
Yeah, I think I also remember that film. It was great. Even Suman Ranganathan's character, Aishwarya, was great. And also, it had that famous TV-breaking scene, which is now a meme.
India and Pakistan. Father Khan and Jaspal Bhatti. Like, that's how you do is comedy, right? Like, that's how you do these quirky side characters that all heroes always have around them. That, for me, was a very good example of, like, old school this thing. And you could see the Kapoor stamp, right? The trademark. A lot of Raj Kapoor in the way that film was made and in how the old school tropes were really committed to. And I really enjoyed that film. Like Suman Ranganathan, I'll never forget because she created that entire quote unquote vamp character that we went on to see over the years, that even Kashmira Shah did in Yes Boss and, you know, a bunch of other films later.
So, you know, she's also done some English films like, okay, The Mistress of Spices, Provoked, I think The Last Legion, I might be saying it wrong, and then, of course, Pride and Prejudice. They didn't seem to work as well, but any thoughts? Have you remember these films at all watching?
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of her international career. I've seen all of these films. Pride and Prejudice was as far as I went in terms of enjoying the film. I think it was mostly because of the hype around the director and, you know, because it was a big crossover sort of thing. And I enjoyed the fact that it was a very flimsy musical and whatnot. But again, I'd say her accent really got to me after a while. And especially watching her interviews and all, even though she was in the Pink Panther film, right? Like with Steve Martin, I think the second one, where she was the villain in that film. And that was as far as her career got in terms of Hollywood fame. I didn't like her roles in the West. Like in the way Hollywood looked at her, used her, the way she wanted to also come across, even though she broke a lot of barriers and maybe paved the way for someone like Priyanka, I don't think... her best work was there. Her best work was here because she had that very distinct, unique Indian beauty about her that I think a lot of directors learned how to use over the years.
And she's a great dancer, I think, one of the best dancers. Yeah.
She was again so underrated because of her looks, right? Like we never used to look at how well she danced or even the way she used her eyes and the most beautiful eyes, but I think she was very good at using her eyes, as good as Shah Rukh Khan probably.
You know, you mentioned eyes, now I think back to Andhadhun and how Shriram Raghavan put Aishwarya's poster that behind the auto, he put Hum Dil De Chuke Sanam, and you know, Aishwarya is known for her eyes. She donated her eyes, so again, like, very interesting thing. Okay, my last question for the day, this can be generic. Tell your thoughts about Khaki. We have spoken about it before, but again, that mystery Aishwarya performance.
In terms of an Aishwarya performance, responsible for one of the greatest twists in like that decade. One of my favorite pulpy political films, I think nobody did it better than Rajkumar Santoshi again. I think that twist where Ajay Devgan Aishwarya is revealed to the end, it's entirely possible because her change of mannerism in that scene itself and the character she played up till then. I think I found it very admirable that she embraced the darker side and played villains in a few films. Very difficult to look at her like that, but I enjoyed that Aishwarya performance just like I enjoyed all of them in that film. And I think they really got that balance between that Abbas Mastan sort of plot twisty nonsense and the political commentary and the social commentary of that film. So Khaki remains, you know, one of the most relevant films today. And it's very easy to forget that Aishwarya was in it. I think they downplayed her looks very well in that film and made her play a character that you thought till the end was a conventional heroine, like hanger-on character, which the heroes are so busy doing their particular mission that they forget about the woman around her. I think Rajkumar Santoshi teased that trope and milked that trope till the end, where she wasn't in the vision of the heroes for the longest time till we realized that she was responsible for the whole thing. So I think that was executed very well because it played into our perception of in Bollywood heroine till the last 10 or 15 minutes. And it conditioned us to ignore her till the end, and then she suddenly hit us with that twist. That twist was possible mostly because of her like very evil smile in that. And I think Kareena tried to pull it off with Fida. I don't think she was that successful.
Okay, thank you, Rahul. I think we covered about an hour of topics. I had a few more topics which we'll take for the next time. And I think what the most insightful thing that I would remember from this podcast about from anything, I think your thoughts on Shah Rukh, like how he's more, his love is more platonic, while with others it's a little bit more sexual. That's something I've never thought about it, but I can see it totally now. So thank you for your insights, and hopefully we'll be back soon. Okay, thanks everybody.
Thank you.